Campus FM je prezenta
Platea. Program li l-għanama esponenti ewlenin fit-teatru.
Li jitkellmu Malino Farrugia.
Nisalmulkom u l-lum nintaw għattini darba ma' Polly Marsh. Polly, thank you again for coming for this program.
It's my great pleasure.
It's been a great pleasure doing the first program, so I'm quite sure we're going to enjoy this one even more. Polly, you were explaining something about the theatre, and we had to stop because time ran short.
Mm.
Now, theatre. How do you see theatre as a culture? Do we humans need theatre?
I don't truly think we can do without
it.
Mm. Some form of... When the problem is one mustn't get into a mindset that says a theatre has to be four walls, seats, and lots of people nodding and clapping. Theatre is about any kind of interactive, creative event. So theatre can happen on that rug in the middle of the floor there.
Sure.
So for me, the great experience of theatre is that it happens in the moment, that you, the audience, if we call you the audience, Group A, we, the actors, Group B, agree between us that you will allow us to create Group C, which are the characters.
Yes.
That means we can't exist, A can't exist without B, B without A, and together they create C. They create the event. So for me, it is an integral part of one's necessary spiritual psyche warming inspiring element, that you have this kind of creative sharing. It can take place at any level, from playing with a child to you know, the great and the good and the sirs and the dames.
Yes.
But you can work with dames and sirs and still not have live, present, in the moment, achingly frightening theatre.
Let's carry on now with the Polly Marsh story of the theatre. You were mentioning when you were doing radio, meeting marvellous actors that we've known. Now, can we get a little bit more information now?
I did briefly touch on Lillian Bayliss.
Now, Lillian Bayliss
now, sort of changed my life.
Really?
Lillian Bayliss, because we took it to Edinburgh.
Uh-huh.
It won a Fringe first, which is lovely. More useful even was the Critics' Choice, which puts it in a little box every day, and I was there for 3.5 weeks. But more importantly, I was approached by somebody from New York University who took the details of play, said how much they'd enjoy, blah, blah, blah. And about 8 months later, I'm contacted by them to ask if I would consider being artist in residence to New York University.
That's nice.
Oh, yeah, pull the other one. I thought, that's a joke. What? It turned out, yes. So I was artist in residence to New York University for 3 months.
Yeah.
BBC Radio bought the rights to the play, and I did it. It's very rare to have an hour of radio time given to you. So Lillian Bayliss was a huge milestone in my life, in as much as it took me abroad. It's taken me to lots of wonderful places. Sure. I've played in France, in Spain, in Germany, America, of course, 3 months there, playing and lecturing.
Did you find any difference in audience reaction, the environments in all these marvellous places?
Absolutely.
Tell us, please.
Yes, I did. The Germans and the Spanish were very hot.
German and Spanish.
Absolutely. I can't tell you the Germans.
This is incredible.
It is. I was expecting, like you, you know, I was expecting kind of uptight, what have you.
Sure.
I had the most warm, loving reception.
From the Germans?
From the two German towns where I played in their art centres. And they were enchanted by Lillian. Now, whether it was something about the woman herself, something about the story.
What year are we in?
We're in 1988.
88. Mm. Not a long time ago.
Not too long ago.
No.
America was another world.
In what way?
Well, in as much as what I, and forgive me, Americans, what I felt there was, A, that you could achieve anything.
Mm-hmm.
There is something about the buzz of New York that makes you think, I can do it, I can fly, I can fly.
Yes.
There were moments when you turn around and I, for the first time, saw one of those fire escapes that go across the window and I thought, oh my gosh, it's all true, it's all going to happen. And then I thought, psycho.
I should be filming this. I mean, what a pity we're not filming this.
I
could see all the faces there and I must explain to our listeners that, oh, you're missing a lot.
Yes, carry on.
Uh-huh.
But I did get this wonderful sensation of energy. Yeah. But the thing was, they speak a different language, as we know. Oscar Wilde said, you know, America and England are separated only by a common language. And it's absolutely true. And there were moments when, in the performance, Lillian waits in a queue to go to the toilet.
So,
and she's very crabby about this. You know, I don't have time to stand here waiting in the toilet. I'm sick. I need a new toilet. And this is the unit that leads us into the whole thing about all the changes she made eventually. But there is a moment that, for me, was very funny when some person, you know, she reacts to something that she hears. And it never got a laugh. I could never understand why it never got a laugh in America. And eventually, about the fourth or fifth performance, I said, did you not find that little unit where she's waiting in the queue for the toilet funny with the things that she's saying? And he said, yes, it was hysterical. And I said, well, why were people not laughing? He said, because we don't know the word queue.
Oh.
He said, we wait in line.
Oh, I see.
So you are going to have to, if you want to laugh, you're going to have to change it to...
Make it.
So here I was, waiting in line, and I thought, I can't. One has to have some integrity. So I held out for another two performances, and then changed it to... So here I am,
waiting in line. Let's have a little bit of a break. Let's listen now to something different. Let's do a part of the female species. Polly will, again, interpret something completely different. Polymarch and female species.
This is an extract from a play called The Female of the Species by Joanna Murray Smith. I recently played the horrendous central character Margot, who is a great feminist writer. I played it at St. James back in February. And I just thought I'd like this. Here we are. Recording.
February 2012.
I thought as we're recording here in the university, I might just do this little harangue from Margot.
Okay.
She's being held hostage in her house by a young student who has threatened to shoot her. And Molly, the student, says, people change their lives because of you. Do you believe it all, or is it just the thrill of creating a storm? Oh, Molly. Of course, there's a place for provocation, for throwing a grenade every so often. But these days, the universities are populated with terrified men and women, desperate to hang on to their jobs at any cost. Sycophants sitting in their comfy little offices, safe in the knowledge that the powers that be love them because they never say anything that's going to create trouble. These are the very people society has depended on to ask the questions that make us test the structure of our lives. If they don't ask the hard questions, who will? The new academics are lily-livered little bureaucrats cocooned in their Subaru Outbacks.
Back to Plataea. We're talking with Polly Marsh after listening to that marvellous interpretation from a role in Female Species. Polly, so the Bailey's experience, I would call it.
Yes.
Any more anecdotes?
They just go on forever.
On and on.
They go on forever. For everywhere I played, there'd be people coming to say, My father was in the choir at the church in Kennington that Lillian used to go to. Really? Yes, and she used to take the she used to take all the children of the actors and the crew. She used to take all the children out for a picnic. And she used to take all her actors. She would force them to come with her to a leper colony in Essex because she had a great yearning and love for lepers. And Georgie could really did not want to go. But she forced everybody to go.
I see.
And John Gibb, the thing about Lillian Bayliss, ladies and gentlemen, what you have to remember is that she had nothing, knew nothing, but knew she was like a missionary. If she'd been in a different situation, she'd have applied the same zeal. God put her, she was convinced, God put her in the theatre. So the theatre became a mission field.
I see.
She ran the Old Vic on Tuppence Halfpenny. She somehow, Shakespeare spoke to her, firmly convinced Shakespeare spoke to her and said, why have you allowed my beautiful place to be so murdered? Because up till then, we mustn't forget that there had been very few complete productions of Shakespeare. We're talking about 1917, 1914. Many in the last 50 or 60 years that people would have been familiar with were bowdlerized. A man called William Bowdler took the guts out of them and gave Romeo and Juliet a happy ending. You know,
So they saw
bowdlerized. That's where the word comes from, bowdlerized.
William
Bowdler altered them.
I see.
Lillian became convinced that it was imperative to do the complete canon
As
it was wrote, first folio.
Sure.
And that's what she did. Soldiered on through the war, through two wars.
Through two wars,
she kept that theatre opened. She then decided to expand, and she felt God led her to Sadler's Wells.
Yes.
She somehow raised the money. Because she was just a nightmare. She was a nightmare.
Sure.
You know, she'd bully.
Giant characters and things.
Yes, bully money out of you.
Sir
Fred McAlpine, the great construction engineer, was so taken with her that he would build a bit of Sadler's Wells until she ran out of money, and then everything would stop, and she'd get a bit more, and then he'd start again. You know, he never ran her into the ground or allowed her to get into debt. So Sadler's Wells was built, and there she had a home for the opera and the ballet. So she's now running three companies.
Sure.
Three companies.
My gosh,
she brought in Marie Ninette de Valois to help with the dance. And originally, she brought Ninette in to show actors what to do with their hands, because obviously getting tired of these bounders just letting their hands dangle at the end of their arms.
Sure.
So originally, she came in to help actors to just loosen up.
Use off their hands.
You know? And out of that, this young Irish woman, this young Ninette de Valois, ends up as the head, the principal of this prestigious drama.
Ballet
house. So there she also got opera in English.
Now let's go back to Polly Marsh.
Here we go.
Every story is marvellous. I'm fascinated by all these stories you're recounting to us, so it doesn't matter. No, definitely. These are stories that only a Polly Marsh would be able to tell. How did you manage to get all this information?
Well, I went to see a number of people. A number of people gave me time. Laurence Olivier, John Gielgud, various actors, Alec Guinness, gave me time, gave me anecdotes, gave me stories.
I see.
There's a home for old actors that I went to see. I don't know. I was led from one person to another to another. So there are two biographies, one by Sybil Thorndike, which is very anecdotal. So, you know, I was able to get words from living people, stories, and also Sybil Thorndyke's.
And you gave her life again. Book,
and I gave her life again.
No. Now, after that, what happens now?
Let's hear more of you. I did a lovely tour of the Borrowers. I did love the Borrowers, uh-huh. working with puppets. That was adorable. Uh-huh. Then I worked at the Watermill again, doing the Norman Conquest.
Yes.
Now, that was important because mm-hmm. that's what brought me to Malta.
I see.
I came to Malta with... can't remember which one we did first. We either played here at the Temizamit Hall mm-hmm. first.
And when was this?
God knows. I'm rubbish. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. About 14 years ago.
14 years ago, okay.
Rubbish on dates. Rubbish. Okay. Telephone numbers, rubbish.
Doesn't matter.
Good at crossword puzzles, though, and I make a mean curry. so we did one at Temizamit and one at the Phoenicia.
Yes, I remember. Yeah? Yeah. It was 14 years ago, 15 or something like that.
Yes.
I remember.
But that's what brought me back, apart from holidays, that's what brought me back to Malta. That, of course, and the fact that I had Elizabeth, my sister, living here, and in the meantime, my sister Anne, Bradley, mm-hmm. had come to Malta and was now Director of the British Council.
Yes.
So I had... More reason
why you should be here.
To be here, to visit more often.
Now, let's listen to another extract. Let's choose the Talking Heads.
Talking Heads, Miss Fossard.
Yes.
Miss
Polymarch, Miss Fossard, Talking Heads.
I was part of a cast of four at the Manuel Theatre performing in Alan Bennett's wonderful Talking Heads. We did four monologues. Mine was called Miss Fossard Finds Her Feet. Mm-hmm. Miss Fossard looks after a brother who's had a stroke and depends on her for everything. Her one treat is to go and, have her feet done once a week.
Mm.
And she goes to a new man, Mr. Dunderdale, and it all turns into something rather darker and slightly more perverse. So, I'm just getting my things on to go out to Mr. Dunderdale's this evening when Bernard has a little accident and manages to broadcast the entire contents of his bladder all the way down the stairs. Mrs. Beavers is taking her time coming, and it's only when I've got him all cleaned up and sitting on the throne that the doorbell eventually goes. Except even then it's not her, just a couple from church about Rwanda. I said, never mind about Rwanda, can we deal with the matter in hand and get a middle-aged gentleman off the lavatory? So, we get him downstairs and manoeuvre him onto his chosen chair 5 inches from the TV screen. After they've gone, I said, you can work the remote. It's about time you remembered how to wipe your own bottom. Not a flicker. Of course, that's where they have you with a stroke. You never know what goes in and what doesn't. When Mrs. Beavers eventually does roll up, she's half an hour late, which means I miss the 10 past bus and have to run all the way up Diney Road. So by the time I'm ringing Mr. Dunderdale's doorbell, I'm all flustered and very conscious that my feet may be perspiring. He said, well, if that's what's troubling you, Miss Fossard, I can straight away put pay to that problem because I always kick off the proceedings by applying a mild astringent. Refined-looking fella. 70-odd, but with a lovely head of hair. One of those double-fronted houses that look out over the cricket field. Rests my foot on a large silk handkerchief. I thought that was a very civilised touch. Mr. Sudderby just used to use yesterday's Evening Post.
Polly March, in doing Miss Fossard's Talking Heads on Plateau. Polly, more experiences of the theatre. You just mentioned that you have arrived in Malta 14 years ago.
Yes,
but
coming more often.
But
really.
Is there any particular more important story before we start your story in Malta in England?
Another important milestone for me was doing a platform performance at the National.
Mm-hmm.
of dissident poets' work.
Ah.
and I was then working at the Royal Exchange,
mm-hmm.
Doing a mega thing. My gosh, Merlin, which appeared to last 4 days. I don't think Tancred Dorscht, if anybody else. My gosh, what an epic! Anyway, I was doing that. And then I went back there, and then I was approached by Amnesty and asked if I mm-hmm. would become part of the campaign to get Irina Ratushinskaya,
mm-hmm.
the Russian dissident poet, released from a labor camp that she was in.
Oh,
now,
I
with
see.
No information as to whether she was alive or dead,
uh-huh.
I asked a friend of mine, Michael Fox, who was an associate director
uh-huh.
at the Royal Exchange, if he would work with me on it. We had no money, no budget, there was nothing, but we were both there in this big theatre, so they gave us a rehearsal space and they gave us a late night slot.
Mm.
And we created a play called The Small Zone.
Mm.
And that was devised using mm-hmm. the translations of her work. She was in solitary confinement. She was writing these poems on mm-hmm. tiny pieces of soap with the head of a pin.
Oh,
and smuggling
God.
Them out. And God bless her, she, on the last night, we did it at the Royal Exchange,
mm-hmm.
then we went to Edinburgh, and then did it somewhere else. And on the last night of the return to the Royal Exchange, we heard she'd been released.
Marvellous.
She was nearly dead, poor lamb. She was only 27, 28. She made it, it took 4 months, but she came to England, and after that, we toured together. I would do a shortened version of the play
mm-hmm.
using her poems. She would then answer
mm-hmm.
questions.
Mm-hmm.
And then she would do some of the poems that I had done in English. She would then do them in Russian.
Oh, I see.
So they could hear the music. Mm-hmm. And that was a profoundly moving experience. And the thing that changed, apart from learning life lessons, she taught me that if you laugh,
mm-hmm.
you live. These people, they put these seven women together in solitary confinement,
ugh.
And those women kept each other alive.
Mm.
And you do not hate your captors, you laugh at them.
Yes.
And that's what keeps you alive.
Let's change the subject, shall
mm-hmm.
we? Let's do something which is on a lighter side now.
All right.
I think we need to, don't
yes,
we?
Let's
do a sketch.
Victoria Wood.
All right.
I do a lot of cabaret. So
okay, so
this.
Let's listen to Paul Marsh doing a sketch. Victoria.
Victoria Wood.
Wood.
I have in the past done a lot of cabaret. I love cabaret work. I love working directly to an audience. And here's a piece I did some years ago. It's a Victoria Wood sketch called Dotty on Women's Lib. Good evening. Here I am again, in spite of a touch of groin strain. Some of you may be shocked to hear the word, but I believe in getting these things out in the open. I was the first woman in our crescent to say boob, and I've never regretted it. Oh, no, where was I? Oh, yes, my groin. Nothing to worry about. I had a heavy day's hoovering yesterday, and I'm afraid I got carried away behind the system with my crevice tool. Now, the other evening, I was snuggled up to Daddy in the lounge alcove when something came up unexpectedly. Normally, with Jack, this kind of thing wouldn't arise. He turned to me. I was winding the wool for a mauve Guernsey, and Jack was picking his teeth with a library ticket. And he said, Chuckles, he said, what do you think to women's lib? I was at a loss, which is very unusual for me. You know, when a burglar alarm went off in our crescent and was mistaken for the 4-minute warning, I was the only one who thought to cancel the milk. Well, now I've ruminated on my position. I was unfortunately unable to get a hold of the copy of The Female Unit by Germaine Greer, but I did read Doctoring Clover by Richard Gordon, which was the next book back on the left. So, I'm not much further on in my research into women's lib, but I have found out what a sputum cup's for. Girls, about this burning of bras we keep hearing about. No, not you, darling. No, you carry on. Oh, dear. Now, A, some would say you don't get a decent jelly unless you put it in a mould, and B, there is nothing nastier than the smell of scorched elastic. What it boils down to is this. Men and women were put on this earth for different purposes. A man is designed to walk 3 miles in the rain to phone for help when the car breaks down. And a woman is designed to say, "You took your time," when he comes back dripping wet. No, that's just my light-hearted way of saying we girls are genetically programmed to rinse those dusters. Let's face it, if God had meant men to have children, he would have given them PVC aprons. Well, no time for more, unfortunately. Next week, I shall be discussing politics, international terrorism, the unemployment figures, and how to make attractive earrings out of kidney stones. Till then, good evening.
That was Polly Marsh giving us something completely different after that beautiful story about the Russian, and all of a sudden turning and making great fun out of that situation. Polly, another thought about theatre. Do you think that theatre can help people?
Yes. And I
in
hope,
what way?
I hope it can, because it can change your life.
Yes.
If you have one thought that is new to you,
yes,
after a shared experience,
yes,
it's served its purpose, hasn't it?
Sure. And with that thought, we end this second program of Platea, talking most enjoyable experience for me, listening to Polly Marsh recounting her life story in the theatre. Thank you, Polly Marsh.
Conto ad intesem au Platea. Program de la anima sponente Eulerin fe teatru.
Litzkelmu Malino Farrugia.
Tecnici Carmenu Grec u Kenneth Metzger.